everyone, to today's conference call. At this time, your lines have been placed on listen-only for conference. Once again, all lines are on listen-only, and our conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn conference over to our host, Dr. Chris Bina. Doctor, you may proceed.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Welcome to today's webinar, session number two. Before we get started, we wanted to check the audio on both the phone and the microphone through Adobe Connect. I know last time we had some requests that the audio be streamed through the Adobe platform. We did it previously per the guidance of the Adobe Connect folks because it was a risk that if it drops that we would lose the audio and then there wouldn't be a recording. So
Chris, can I just chime in and be sure that they can hear me on the computer as well? I'm just
microphone
is still off, but I just want to be sure it's okay. Okay.
Great.
Sounds like they can hear both of us.
All right. So we will keep checking on those elements.
Yep.
Yes.
Sorry, somebody just said we can't hear that speaker.
Oh. How about this? I will actually help move my microphone closer to my recording or my desktop microphone, so that way we can have both. We'll have the audio we will post, but also the slides, the Adobe slides. Okay, so we've got a jam-packed schedule. I would like to kick it off and by starting saying again, welcome and thank you for joining us. Today is the second session. We're going to talk about a select topic for the Autism Services Navigator, the Comprehensive Care Plan, beneficiary eligibility, and family, parent and family support. So if I scroll down to the next slide, again, my name is Chris Vienna. I work in the Medical Affairs Directorate at the Defense Health Agency, and I am the clinical lead for the Autism Care Demonstration. Amy?
Hi, yes, I am Dr. Amy Serta. I'm a nurse consultant for the TRICARE Health Plan at the Defense Health Agency.
Great. So again, today we'll talk about those four topics, the ASN, the CCP, beneficiary eligibility, the parent family support. At the very end of our slides, we will talk about the timeline. We'll highlight the relevant items that pertain to today's presentation. And then we have Q&As. We are actually going to intermix some of the Q&As in the presentation because some of them will be really relevant to that immediate topic, and then others, I think, are additional questions that that have been submitted. Having said that, thank you to those who have sent questions. We've gotten several questions from various stakeholders, and I want to, you know, let everybody know that they're again, are a lot of various groups dialing in today. We have beneficiaries, we have providers, we have advocates, we have military offices, things like the EFMP office, and then other stakeholders who have been interested in this change. So if I go to the next slide, a reminder about some housekeeping rules here. Both the audio and Adobe are on listen only. Since there's so many folks on the call, we have muted those to you guys, but feel free to reach out and send us comments and questions. You can do that through the dha.acd@mail.mil mailbox or in the chat box here, the Q&A chat box on the Adobe Connect. Remember, please be respectful with your questions and your comments. Again, this is being recorded, so we will be able to post them later. The slides you can see here we're projecting, they're also available in your downloads box on the screen, but they'll also be posted on the health.mil website, and as well as the recording. And one quick housekeeping note on last session's slide, we had a couple of edits that we found through comments and questions that came in. There were some clarification points that we were able to make. So I would recommend that you re-download either from here, we loaded the clean new one, or from the website, that's the most accurate one. And again, the slides and recordings will be posted. If you have any, my apologies for that email that came through, but slides, if you can give us a couple of days to get all that stuff uploaded, what happens is that there's a review process on getting all that approved for posting. So once we're done here, we reach out to the communications team, and then they post that for us. Okay, and then the next slide, again, is the manual was published on March 23rd. Here's the link where you can access the manual if you don't pull it from either the download box here on the website or from health.mil. It's just another place where you can have access to the manual. And I'm going to turn it over to Amy now.
Thanks, Chris. Hopefully everybody can hear me. It seemed like the echo was worse when I turned my mic on, so I turned it back off. Just trying to read people's comments here. So let's jump right in. What is an ASN? So if you're looking at the manual, this essentially starts at paragraph 6.0. And an ASN, or what we call the Autism Service Navigator, this whole paragraph section of 6.0 down. But before I go into what exactly an ASN is, I wanted to first define what a contractor is. We've received a lot of questions about what is a contractor, who are they, and what is their role in all of this. So there are several contractors associated with the TRICARE benefit. The contractor for the East region is Humana Government Business. The West region is HealthNet Federal Services. There's a TRICARE Overseas Program contractor who's International SOS. And there is six designated provider groups spread out in the United States that are known as the U.S. FHP plans. We also have TRICARE for Life contractor, who is WPS, or Wisconsin Physician Services. When we're looking at this, the majority of these changes in the manual apply to the East and West region contractors, who are Humana, Government Business, and HealthNet Federal Services. The other contractors have various modifications or exclusions in these changes, and you'll see those as you read through the manual. Most of the providers on this call today likely hold agreements with either Humana Government Business or HealthNet Federal Services. Typically, ABA providers have an agreement with one contractor, although there are instances where there's a very large provider group that would go across regions and, you know, may have agreements with multiple contractors. An example would be if there was a location, a provider group that may have a location in California in the West region, and then another location in Florida in the East region, they may hold an agreement with both Humana Government Business and HealthNet Federal Services. So I hope that helps clear up the term contractor. So jumping into the ASN, that definition is located at paragraph 11.11. The ASN collaborates and oversees the assessment, planning, facilitation, care coordination, evaluation, and advocacy for options and services to meet an individual's comprehensive health needs through communication and available resources to promote quality, cost-effective outcomes. They really serve as the primary advocate for the beneficiary and family. They serve as the primary point of contact. And they may even be assisted by a non-clinical outreach coordinator. Next slide, Chris. So who is an ASN? Again, these ASNs are employed or contracted by a contractor. You know, we just went through all those contractors. And this slide is pretty straightforward. So an ASN must hold a current valid unrestricted license, which could include an RN or a registered nurse with case management experience, a clinical psychologist, a licensed clinical social worker, or even other licensed mental health professionals who possess a certification in CM. The ASN must have clinical experience in pediatrics, behavioral health, and/or autism spectrum disorder, a healthcare environment, and proven care management experience. We really want these patient advocates to be, you know, experienced in these areas so they are able to help the family. Next slide, Chris. Okay, so who will receive an ASN? This is targeted, and again, in that paragraph 6.0, and I think it goes to 6.1.4.3. So the ASN would apply to beneficiaries in the East and the West regions. So those would be the ones enrolled to HealthNet Federal Services or Humana Government Business. Again, the ASN is employed by or contracted through HealthNet Federal Services or Humana Government Business. All new beneficiaries to the ACD as of October 1st, 2021 will be assigned an ASN. So you might be thinking, well, what does new to the ACD mean? So that would be beneficiaries not currently receiving ABA services under the ACD, or maybe they had a gap in ABA services of greater than 12 months. Those would be the individuals that are new. So for example, if a beneficiary hasn't done anything, say they have a referral and it's been sitting there and they never activated their referral, they never used their authorization, it's just been there. If it's been over a year, then they would be considered, that would be considered a large break in service and a BINI would be considered new. Currently, if a beneficiary was currently enrolled in the ACD and receiving ABA services, but say they moved from one region to the other, which happens all the time, they would not be considered new to the ACD. And I think it's just important to note here that the TRICARE Overseas Program, the U.S. Family Health Plans, and the TRICARE for Life Program, they are not required to provide the ASN. Next slide. So we had some questions come in that we thought were really good questions, and we would incorporate them into this presentation. So can a current ACD beneficiary have an ASN? So the ASN role does not start until October 1st, 2021, and is available to new beneficiaries entering the program after that date. However, current beneficiaries may access contractor care or case management services, MTS case management services, or EFMP care coordination and case management services. So there's still people there to help them. The next question, the role of the ASN seems to overlap or overtake the EFMP role. Why would the ASN step on there? Okay, so I think it's like, why would the ASN need to step in here if there's already an EFMP coordinator? I think is what this means. So an EFMP, it's a service-owned program. It's not medical, and it has three main purposes: identification and enrollment, assignment coordination, and support to help families identify services and programs. EFMP helps to ensure families will have access to care when they PCS to a new location. You know, it's really an important role for this, for the services to ensure the new location provides the beneficiary access to all services a family member may need. they wouldn't want to send somebody to a very rural area that has no access to, you know, the services that the beneficiary may currently be currently may need. So the EFMP services are outside of the private sector care or the TRICARE benefit. The ASN will be specific to the TRICARE benefit and will be someone that can help the families connect all the pieces together. The scope of collaboration, advocacy, and oversight is more comprehensive than the EFMP coordinator. I hope that helps clear that up. All right, so things to expect from the ASN. We've broken this out into two parts. The first being things to expect for the beneficiary and the family. And then the second will be the next slide, what things that the provider can expect. So once the contractor receives the referral, they will immediately reach out to the family to engage and provide information about the ACD and next steps. The ASN's primary focus is on the beneficiary and the goals for that beneficiary. The ASN will work with the beneficiary and the family to develop the CCP, or the Comprehensive Care Plan. And I'll go into that CCP more in just a little bit. The ASN will coordinate medical and behavioral health services, MTF services, ECHO services, respite, ABA, services, and parent-mediated programs. Over the years, we have received lots of feedback from parents and providers about the overwhelming feelings a family can have when first receiving a diagnosis and the complexities of accessing all these available services. I think this is such an important and critical role of the ASN, as there will finally be a person who is knowledgeable of all those available services and has a primary focus for the beneficiary. Through the CCP, the ASN will also ensure all services work in collaboration to achieve the optimal outcomes. The ASN will also coordinate and participate in medical team conferences and facilitate continuity of care. This is also another area we have received lots of feedback on. Care coordination is particularly important, especially in our beneficiary population, as families often move every few years. Also, DHA has a focus on care coordination overall, and the ACD is no different. While there are current case management and care coordination activities, this ASN role is essential and really a concentrated effort to streamline and help these families access the services they are entitled to. The ASN will also identify local level services. That could be Military One Source, Sesame Street Program. Some locations across the country have police departments involved. Think, for example, the D.C. metro area has programs to promote safety and awareness for specific populations. Next slide, Chris. So things to expect from an ASN for treating providers. You may notice this list is a bit shorter from the previous slide, but I just want to point out that there are benefits for the providers, but the ASN role is really to focus on the beneficiary. So some things to expect are for the ASN to share the CCP with treating providers, be a central point of contact for the family, and being a central point of contact for the family can have benefits such as, you know, the ASN is tracking certain timelines like outcome measures. So that should streamline that process. And then another area is to coordinate and participate in the medical team conferences. There's been a lot of questions submitted regarding medical team conferences, I won't go into the coding piece right now because we're going to talk about that in a later webinar, but I do want to clarify that the medical team conference is not a requirement. It is rather a mechanism to facilitate and get reimbursed for collaboration with other providers regarding the care of the beneficiary. It is not required in any way, but it's just a way for you to get reimbursed if you do the work. So I hope that helps there too. And lastly, they'll be able to share the outcome measures data with the team of treating providers. So on to the comprehensive care plan. The comprehensive care plan, or the CCP, helps beneficiaries work with their care team to plan, document, and accomplish individualized care goals and healthier outcomes. The CCP is developed and maintained by the AFN. This is a contractor requirement, not a provider requirement. The CCP sets client goals, identifies activities or action steps needed to achieve these goals, expected dates for each action step, and any resource or support needed to complete the care plan. Each action step on the care plan should list a responsible party, a target date, an outcome, and an outcome date. The plan may incorporate care services from various entities like behavioral health, nursing, or even other specialists and allied health professionals, as well as even community services or school services. The ASN is an active participant in the creation of the CCP, ensuring that it is client-centered and incorporates the client's goals. Again, it's important to understand that the CCP is in by no means a treatment plan. I guess I don't want people to get confused here. So treating providers still need to do their treatment plans. So if you're an ABA provider, you still need to do your ABA treatment plan. The CCP is separate and it's a contractor requirement. The ASN organizes those comprehensive services into this one document, and it captures the entire range of services that are individualized for this specific beneficiary. So all the components in the CCP will assist the ASN in tracking important data, and that could be services, progress, timelines, moves, and ultimately moving towards a discharge plan. So the CCP will help reach that target for the ultimate goal for the beneficiary to reach their maximum potential. You know, and even more so with this specific population and the high number of comorbid conditions and multiple touch points for services, it's really in the best interest of the Benny and the family to have someone consolidate all the services and follow and ensure goals are achieved. And again, the CCP will be updated every 6 months in line with the continued authorization of ABA services. Next slide. Sorry, I'm having a problem on my end. Okay. Components of the CCP. All new beneficiaries to the ACD that have an ASN assigned will have a CCP completed. I want to stress that services can still begin while the CCP is being developed. So after a referral is submitted and the ASN makes contact, a CCP will begin development to include but not limited to the intake, the review of services, which includes current and recommended. These services could be a number of services from local level or communities to speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, ABA services, parent mediated programs, and to know that those recommendations would likely come from the diagnosing provider and the family's goals. And then we'll have an incorporation of all outcome measures and the IEP if it's available. So referrals to approved services will be authorized, However, if the CCP is not completed within 90 days due to the family or the beneficiary being non-compliant, ABA services will be put on hold until the CCP is completed. I think it's critical to understand that the only reason ABA services would be paused is if the family has not completed their part of the CCP. For example, maybe not returning ASN calls, not completing the outcome measures, or not actively participating in the process. The goals identified in the CCP are based on the beneficiaries and family priorities, so if they are not providing input, then a plan cannot be developed. Next slide. Okay, and here is some more submitted questions. So the 90 calendar days referenced in 6.2.2 appears as though this will create an additional 90 days of wait time for a family to obtain services. Is this correct? So there's no intent of delaying any services as a result of the CCP process. As I just mentioned, services can begin. Referrals and authorizations will continue per contract requirements and timelines, and services may begin before completion of the CCP. However, that CCP must be completed within 90 days. Next question was, when does the 28-day access requirement begin once the ASN is involved, since the ASN has 90 days to develop the CCP? So I think this question is really in two separate requirements. First, the 28-day access to care requirement is a contractor requirement to ensure beneficiaries have timely access to services. It has nothing to do with the CCP. This timeline, the 28-day access to care timeline, begins when the referral is verified. The second part regarding the ASN and the CCP development is separate from the 28-day access to care requirement, and the ASN has 90 days to develop the CCP. All right. Chris, next slide, and I believe it is over to you.
It is, but before I move on, I wanted to address some of the comments or questions that are coming in as you spoke to some of them and people are just asking for a little bit more clarification. So there was one question about how soon after the referral to the ACD will an ASN make contact with the family. We anticipate this to happen within hours, just a few days of that referral coming in. The goal is, again, to make that initial engagement and kind of get that ball rolling. There's no expectation, actually not even a, you know, there's no requirement, but that contact should happen pretty quickly. Another question was about, can the ABA assessment occur while the comprehensive care plan is in development? And yes, they absolutely can be ongoing at the same time. Like Dr. Serta said, there's no expectation or there's no prohibition for keeping things going. There's no interference with delays. There's no on the contractor side. Again, if the family is not responding or if the family is not engaging, that's an issue, and the contractors will continue to work on that. Another question that came in is, will the ASN have a role in approving services? And that, I want to, Dr. Serta didn't talk about that, but I want to drive home the point that the ASN is about putting the plan together for the beneficiary. Sure, they'll be thinking about what other services are out there. Sure, they'll be thinking about asking the questions of what's working, what's not working, but their role is not to make that determination at all. Okay, there was another question about, is it possible if the diagnosing provider recommends ABA and the ASN does not, does that get excluded? Again, that is not the role of the ASN. The ASN is not the diagnosing provider and is not the one submitting any referrals for treatment. They are really the individual who is pulling the total comprehensive, I don't know how many more synonyms I could say, but really bringing everything together in one big picture. There was another question about will the comprehensive care plan be sent to the providers? That is the expectation that all those actively treating will receive that copy. So again, you're looking at what's the total picture. There were a couple questions about PCSing, and while it's not specific to this topic, I think it's important and worth sharing. The role of EFMP, again, is about checking availability of services and the appropriateness of a location for a specific provider. I'm sorry, for a specific beneficiary. But again, the PCS is about the active duty service member relocating. So while EFMP, you know, their process is about ensuring or trying to minimize risk, it still happens that people end up in locations that may or may not have the robust network of services. But, you know, EFMP is working on that process, and there's a, you know, big charge within DHA and the DOD about standardizing care coordination and warm handoffs, so that is underway. There was another thing about referrals changing regions. That's something that is just broadly TRICARE has been working on, and referrals changing regions. While there is a mechanism, we want to do better, and so that's part of the ASN's responsibility is to help with some of that. And then one more question that I see a lot of them have come in, similar questions by various people, is about how many what's the caseload for the ASN? I mean, ultimately, that's a contractor question, but I think, you know, it's not one-to-one. You're not going to have one ASN for every beneficiary, but you're also not going to have, like, 5,000 beneficiaries to one ASN. I think that determination is generally made on complexity and severity of the case and the needs. But that's all I'll say right now about that number, because I don't have that number, and I think it really is up to the contractors to determine what is their best model and practice for those services. Okay, so now I will move on to beneficiary eligibility. I'll start with the things that have not changed. There's some of these are reflected in the timeline later, so we'll talk to that. Did I do that? Or things that have not changed. Okay. So the first item is about TRICARE eligibility. Every single person who receives TRICARE services must be TRICARE eligible, meaning that you are enrolled in a program and that you are receiving, you know, you're like in DEERS and that you have a health plan. And those, just a few examples of what those health plans look like, right? Prime and Select, the designated providers for the U.S. Family Health Plans. There's a whole list of them, and they apply to various groups. TFL is TRICARE for Life. That's generally the 65 and over population. So they're, again, out of the scope of this presentation, but there are TRICARE eligibility crosses a variety of plans, but the common thing is you have to be eligible. Again, what hasn't changed is you need a diagnosis of autism by an approved provider. We will talk about who those are in a second. The next item is for the active duty family members. Again, enrollment in EFMP and registration in ECHO, those have not changed. And a reminder that EFMP is not a medical program, it's a line program, and that's a requirement of the services, not of DHA or TRICARE. And ECHO is the enhanced or additional benefits above and beyond the TRICARE basic program. So additional speech, additional OT, respite services, there are durable equipment services available. And when it comes to cost shares, co-pays, EFMP is separate outside of, your by appointments under the basic benefit or under the autism care demonstration. Cost shares are based on the sponsor's rank and if you use any services in any given month. The other thing that has not changed is when services are no longer eligible. You either are no longer a TRICARE beneficiary or, you know, you have either transitioned out of ABA or the ACD or just like any other benefit, you know, once you stop using it, not that you can't use it again, it's just you're not using it. All right. For the next slide, what we're going to start to talk about the things that have in fact changed for eligibility. So who is an approved ASD diagnosing provider? That definition is actually in the manual. It's paragraph 1113. And just, I think I'll go over it again in a little bit here, but just a reminder, we have two provider categories. One are the primary care managers, and those are people like your pediatrician, your family medicine doctor. But the new thing that was added was to this category. It's about the pediatric nurse practitioners. That was an expansion to who can diagnose, who's an approved diagnosing provider. And just a reminder that there are the specialized ASD diagnosing provider category, and those are your developmental behavioral pediatricians, your neurodevelopmentalists, your child neurologists, psychiatrists, psychologists, and then your doctors of nursing practice who have some additional training. And again, those are spelled out in the paragraph 1113. The next item that has changed is the removal of the requirement to have that confirmation diagnosis. So if you remember prior to this change, if you saw a PCM, you had to go to a specialist within 1 year of your initial diagnosis. And that was about getting going to the PCM was about getting access to services, and then while you're trying to get to that specialist appointment, we're no longer requiring that. But I would put a plug out there, and that's why it's a bullet in and of itself. It is really recommended to go see the specialist. They will spend more time with the family. They will do a thorough, comprehensive assessment to include a variety of baseline measures. And even expand out to some of the other maybe potential disciplines, right? Maybe there's a genetics referral. Maybe there's a nutrition referral. Not that your PCM can't do that, but your specialist has already kind of that suite of assessments and protocols in mind. The next thing that is changing is the diagnosing provider no longer needs to submit a referral for the outcome measure. Oh, I think I skipped ahead. Hold on. This one is about the diagnosing provider with their referral will submit a validated assessment tool, and that's something like the ADOS, most primary care folks aren't doing the ADOS, but there is a requirement to have an assessment tool. So things like the screening tool for autism in toddlers and young children, maybe there's the childhood autism rating scale. That's all of that information is found in paragraph 4.2.1.2, and those are part of the documentation requirement for diagnosis now. The other one is the DSM checklist, which is on the next slide, and I'll get to it shortly. That is about ensuring consistent documentation, especially with this population where just the military population, where people are PCSing every couple of years, health records get lost, or things aren't documented consistently. I will also say that the DSM checklist was a recommendation from our developmental behavioral pediatricians within the military health system, and so we thank them for helping us help standardize that diagnostic process. Again, it's a tool for any provider going forward about what are we currently seeing at timestamp one, and then the next physician or provider who gets the responsibility for that child or beneficiary to see has progress been made, has progress not been made, and that is a great tracking effort for us. So again, before I move on, the last bullet on here is about that has changed is the first diagnosis benchmark. Again, the developmental pediatricians recommended that for kids who are newly diagnosed at age 8 or later, so they've lived life, nobody's made a diagnosis to the point, and then at age 8 there's something that the families are drawn to go to an appointment, that now needs to be with a specialist. Again, I think the specialist will do a comprehensive review, do a differential diagnosis, and spend more time looking at why now a referral for services is being requested. If I go to the next slide, you can see an example of the checklist. I realize it's super small, but if you can roughly see, there's the DSM-5 criteria at the top. There's the you can see A, B, C, D. Those are the criteria, and then present, not present. Again, this is meant to be a guide for documentation purposes. The contractors will provide additional guidance going forward once their systems are in place and this element becomes effective. On the next slide, more things that have changed. This is about the outcome measures. I got ahead of myself. So the outcome measures no longer require a referral from the specialized ASD diagnosing provider. They can still complete them, but there is no longer a requirement. So the contractors will aid in the accomplishing of those outcome measures. And again, the authorization will be to any provider who is competent to administer those measures. So it may be the BCBA, it may be the specialist, it may be a psychologist, it may be a psychiatrist or developmentalist. So the idea is to get true baselines, get true documentation, and keep track of a beneficiary's progress. The next one is about the completion of those measures. Again, we found that a lot of folks had trouble completing them, period, and then, you know, care was ongoing without meeting some of these requirements. So in light of lifting the burdensome referral component, now we can move it to really being at the beginning. And with the ASN in particular being involved, that will help facilitate and identify who and when those can be done. The last thing that has changed is the echo timeline. Under the ACD, we had an extra 90-day provisional period. That has been deleted. One, as we move to align more towards a basic benefit and those regular requirements, there, you know, these exceptions or extensions that make the ACD different are proved challenging. Additionally, very few beneficiaries actually exceeded the 90-day provisional period. Most often, they fell into two categories. One, and this is a great example, you know, COVID hit and people had, access challenges to, you know, getting your EFMP documents completed and submitted. So that was an easy one. The other bucket of reasons why people did not complete was the family never took any steps to make progress. And so that is, you know, giving additional 90 days is kind of unrealistic or unreasonable to continue to kind of offer that provisional period when there has been no activity, no desire, no movement. Now, when there is engagement, obviously, we're working it. We've got provisions in place to help families. But when there's Zippo contact, I think that's telling in and of itself. Okay, so now we're going to go to some slides, some questions. So again, who can diagnose autism? Autism spectrum disorder. So I pulled the definition right there from a paragraph 11-13, and I spoke to the two groups, the specialists and the TCMs. And then the next one is about who is TRICARE authorized? Is there a list of providers or is this a certification? Generally speaking, TRICARE authorized providers are defined in federal regulations, particularly the section 199.6, and you can go see what their requirements, education, training, licensure, certification, you can see all that. Additionally, you can go to the contractor website or just reach to the contractor themselves directly. Okay, family support. I see the time, so I want to get through these slides. Family support is one of my most favorite parts of this revision is I think families are one of the most critical components of any child's or any beneficiary's treatment plan, and so what we need to do better about providing support to those families. So one of the requirements is about contractor in particular is about developing this new to the ACD toolkit. These are, while the details still need to be submitted and approved for each contractor, these are toolkits that are, you know, introduction to the ACD, things you need to know. Here are some timelines that are important to keep track of. Just basic information about the program. Again, the contractor will provide on their website the, you know, resources and supports, local level supports, military, the installation activities, again, both clinical and non-clinical. Amy spoke to some of those non-clinical services. And then parent-mediated programs. That's another component and support that families can have. Again, not necessarily to replace any service, but as another supplement and option. Parent-mediated programs are spelled out a little bit more in the manual. Of note, that the TRICARE oversees the USFHP and the TRICARE for Life contractors do not have this requirement, but if a beneficiary does have questions, they certainly can call their contractor and ask for some support. All right, timeline. So I mentioned timeline. This should look mostly the same from last presentation, except this time we're highlighting the major time points for the things relative to the ASM, the beneficiary eligibility, family, and the comprehensive care plan. So you can see everything's in red and stars. Hope we're drawing enough attention to it. But those are your two major timelines for this today's presentation. May 1st, the lifting of a bunch of things, and then the October 1st date is mostly tied to the ASN activities. Okay. A reminder, you can submit questions, you can continue to submit questions in the chat box, but you can also send questions to the ACD mailbox. Please remember, don't send any PII or PHI, as this is not a secured email, and Amy or I do not have access to beneficiary information anyway, and we would be sending that to the contractor separately. Okay, here we are for the questions. Amy, I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Chris. Okay, so do families currently enrolled in ECHO have an ASN assigned to them? So just remember, ECHO registration is a separate requirement from the ASN, and all new beneficiaries or families entering the ACD, on or after October 1st, 2021, will have an ASN assigned to them. Next question, per 6.1.2, the ASN shall make contact with the family to describe the ASN services prior to any ABA services being authorized. No client should be held up for services while awaiting a phone call from an ASN. Like Chris mentioned earlier, we see this occurring within hours or days of the referral being received by the contractor. There is no expectation that services will be delayed based on the contractor's role. However, if the family does not return the phone call or contact the contractor, the delay may be because of that. And I think, you know, Chris, we have a ton of questions still coming in.
Yeah, I mean, they're coming in pretty quickly, so I think some of these we're going to have to post at a later date. But so let's keep going with the ones prepared, and then I'm going to try and fill in where things are popping up.
Okay. Sounds good. Then next slide, please. Okay, per paragraph 6.8, families who decline the ASN will not be eligible for the ACD. How can the ASN be made mandatory? So the ASN has a key role in providing education, supports, and advocacy to the family. Remember, these families have complex care needs that often require extensive supports and services throughout their episode of care. We really want this ASN role to be viewed as a positive addition to the ACD, where families often struggle in a number of ways. Next question. Can parents decline recommended adjunctive services such as speech therapy in the CCP or by an APA provider and still receive ABA, or will this negatively impact their continued participation? So, yes, parents can decline recommended services. As in all healthcare, parents have the choice to take their child to any appointment. However, if a child is referred and the family declines services, that information would be noted in the CCP. And again, the CCP is done by the contractor. The contractors are not providers. They are contractors of the TRICARE benefit, Humana Government Business, HealthNet Federal Services, the six USFHP designated providers and TFL and TRICARE Overseas. I think I said that all again. I've seen multiple questions still coming in about that. I just wanted to clear that up. Next question. Next slide, sorry. Will providers have access to the ASNs? The role of the ASN is to provide support to the beneficiary and their family. So while the ASN will likely be in touch with the provider, the primary focus is the beneficiary. ABA providers should contact their contractor representative for additional details on who and what are the appropriate communication channels. Will I have the same contractor for all the patients in my group? So I kind of talked about this at the beginning. If your business is located in one region and you have an agreement with only one contractor, then yes, you will have the same contractor for your TRICARE patient. However, if you're meaning if all your patients will have the same ASN, that may not be so. Chris touched on this, but you know, depending on caseload and all that, that'll be dependent on the contractor and just an individual basis. Next.
Okay. This one came in. There were some questions about rates. We will talk about the impact of rates a little bit later. I realize this is not about the four items we're talking about, but this, because it's going to be posted in the coming days here, we wanted to touch on this question. So there was a concern about a rate reduction. The manual does not actually talk about any reductions whatsoever. If you remember that they are geographically adjusted by Medicare or CMS designations. And so what's listed in the manual is a floor, not necessarily the geographically adjusted rates. So again, those will be posted before May 1st. The next question here is about, will the contractor be responsible for this DD form 1423? And can you guys get access to that? This form is a contractor form. It's about their requirements. It is not a provider or anything related to healthcare delivery or things like that. This is specific to contractors and their requirements. Next question is about some outcome measures. I'm sorry, I'll just read it. In some geographical areas, the two-year measures are currently taking months to schedule and weeks to get reports scored in the system. Since we're moving to an annual timeline, what are the safeguards in place for getting this done so beneficiaries don't lose access? Again, with the ASN and the active role, and the removal of the referral requirements, and the expansion of who can do them, these are all mitigation factors to get these services done. I'm going to keep going because we're almost out of time here. TRICARE has, this one is about behavior technicians. I'm going to summarize the longer question. It's about the registered behavior technician designation and it appears that the interpretation is that behavior technicians is a different provider type. I wanted to bring this up here is that behavior technicians is the generic term and that the certification bodies have specific certifying or certification titles, and that is the registered behavior technician, the BCAT and the ABAT by the different certifying bodies. We TRICARE require that all behavior or ABA providers have a certification. So I hope the individual who, or everybody for that matter, understands the use of the word behavior technician as a general term and that everybody per the requirements listed in the TRICARE operations manual understands that you still have to have a certification. There are a couple of questions that I'd like to touch on, and maybe Amy, you have a couple that you flagged as they're coming in. There was a question about how will the diagnosing provider know of these changes. That's a great question. It's our responsibility as well as the contractor responsibility to educate. I believe that the contractors, as they're developing and applying these changes, will have those processes in place. Also, remember that some of these requirements don't start right away, so there's no immediate risk for, you know, that people will lose services or not get services because they're not compliant. There was another question about a referral every 2 years. That has not changed. And that's really about, you know, the concept of the primary care provider, right? There is a overseeing physician of the beneficiary's care is to ensure that they're making progress, that they are continuing to receive the most appropriate services, and that somebody's actually touching base. And that's the referral requirement. It's not a re-diagnosis. It's not a new diagnostic assessment. It is what it's checking in on that beneficiary and seeing how progress is going in by that at that physician level or the diagnosing provider level. Real quick, Amy.
Okay, so next couple of meetings, we have April 16th at noon Eastern time going over the ABA benefit, and then April 21st at 1 Eastern time with other important changes that we haven't covered to date. Again, please submit your questions in advance. We will take these questions in the chat box and sort through them. Also, please do not send PII or PHI to the ACD email. And lastly, if you want to subscribe to the Gov Delivery ACD group, you can do so at this link. We greatly appreciate you all attending and asking so many great questions. It really helps us to guide how we're communicating this information out. So we really, really just appreciate you all.
And one more thing. Somebody asked a question, where can these recordings be found? Again, that's www.health.mil/autism. Give us a couple of days to retrieve and do all the checks and balances, and then those will be posted. The Q&As will take us a little bit outside of the slide deck, will take us a little bit longer to post, but we will work on that. And that's all I have. Thank you, everybody, for participating. We'll talk to you next Friday. I think it's at noon. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you for everyone's participation. This now concludes today's conference. All lines may disconnect at this time.